Good to be with you all today. Good to be here. I'd like to begin just with a couple words of meditation. May the space that we share together be a space where we learn to frame the questions that we need to continue on our spiritual search. May the meditations of my heart and the words of my mouth, may they be honest to my soul, but may they help us all move forward towards our own. Amen. So it was already an issue with the two firstborn. Already. One would be loved, and the other would be rejected. As the story goes, Adam and Eve bore two sons. Cain cultivated the land. Abel became a shepherd of the flock. Both brought the fruits of their labors to God for an offering. And God had appreciation for Abel, for his offering of flesh, but he did not have appreciation for Cain's vegetables and fruit. Cain was just fine with this, so he went back into the field singing. Right? No. Cain was furious. He was brokenhearted. This God of the story feigned bemusement. Cain, why so glum? Just keep doing what you're doing and you will be accepted. Cain was not so easily placated. The green in his eyes grew murderous, and while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and murdered him. God seems so strange to me in this tale. I can't quite wrap my mind around a deity that does not see the error of indoctrinating a wholly given inequality. Interpretations of the story abound. Some recognize Abel as the first martyr and Cain as the first embodiment of evil. I'm skeptical about this interpretation, too simple and honestly too Christian, and not early Christian, the later Christian. Supersessionist is the word. That means that it's a Jewish story, but it's being read through the Christian identity. I'm instead drawn to the scholarship that sees a marked similarity between the Cain and Abel story as an earlier Sumerian tale that pitted nomadic shepherds against settled farmers. Rather than read Cain and Abel as the firstborn humans, if we read it this way, we see them metaphorically as examples of humanity when humanity grew from the age of hunter-gatherers to the age of agriculture. And then, of course, social inequality arose. But there's more, and in biblical scholarship, there always is, right? Before God sends Cain away to wander for his act of vengeance and brutality, he marks him. This is where we get the term, the mark of Cain. How does he mark him? The first tattoo? A large heart on his arm that says, "Mom"? We don't know, really. We only know that the ancient Hebrews used the word oath, which is found in the scriptures 79 times, and it roughly means mark, sign, or token. The ambiguity of the scriptures makes them so beautiful to read. Metaphor saves us from the rigidity of certainty and fact. It opens up vast avenues for exploration, but it also opens vast avenues for misuse. White supremacists twist the word oath for their purposes. Even though there is nowhere in the Bible to indicate the mark as a darkened skin color, that's what the supremacists attest. Cain, marked by God, deserves alienation, slavery, and inequality. No. It's frightening, isn't it, the way we can twist tales to suit our assumptions? And I'm not talking about white supremacists only here. We all do it, to a great extent. but I'll get back to that later. First, what we do know about the meaning of the mark of Cain is that it was meant to dissuade those who met Cain from killing him. Why? Was God the first vindictive punisher in some superhero movie? He wouldn't kill the offender, but he would make him wander for all the 900 years of his life, suffering the guilt of his conscience? I don't see the Hebrew God as a Darth Vader figure. Maybe, just maybe, we can read this story as a moral exploration, representing the pain born of a value imbalance. A value imbalance with the power to destroy brotherly love. Maybe, just maybe, we still need Cain and his oath to wander the earth and remind the whole of creation the immorality of a God-given or incarnated, an innate value imbalance. Because, and this is key, in the story it is God who blesses Abel and refuses to bless Cain, the inequality is not mortal, not the difference between one person's skill and another's weakness. It is an unredeemable value imbalance that cannot be overcome. I just returned from a wonderful vacation to the incredibly imbalanced and unbalanced city of New Orleans. But I learned about value and how it works on the way there. I have an old straw hat shaped like a cowboy hat. It's a great sun protector. And I bring it with me to sunny places. It is old. It is literally falling apart. But I love it. I placed it in an overhead bin. A little while later, a man in a seat behind me rose to place his jacket in the same bin. I saw him hastily stuff my hat between two suitcases to make room. Brazen, I asked him, "Is that hat now squished in there?" He fumbled a bit with a response, and then while moving it to a somewhat safer location, dismissively, with eyes askance, said, "Yeah, and it might even have another year in it." I felt hurt, a sinking kind of hurt, but I didn't understand it at first. I work to remain unattached to objects. I heard a short, pithy moral once that I work to uphold. It's people are more important than things. Meaning, if my husband drops my favorite cup, I should hug him. So why was I hurting? Not in an excruciating way, but in a visceral one. The man on the plane had devalued something that was of value to me. Yes, it's an old hat, but it protects me from the sun, and I think it suits me. Things don't only have value if they are expensive. They have value when we love them and when we need them. The man on the plane showed his bias that expensive things are worth more than inexpensive ones or old ones. And his actions, the result of his bias, rejected, discounted, ignored the value that I placed in my hat. I'm talking about biases and value imbalances here because that is where we get to the immorality of inequality. No two humans are equal in the sense of sameness. Our lovely children who gathered up here reminded us of that. And I don't think we would want to be treated as if we were all the same, equally so. We want to be loved for being our own unique self with our own unique gifts and our own unique challenges. Equality is not about sameness, not even for me about getting everyone to the same place. It is, however, about value, valuing everyone equally so that our inherent and unjust biases do not subject some to unequal treatment. Our closing words, and you're welcome to find them in your orders of service, they invite us to recognize a unity behind our differences and beneath our diversities. I love this because the words invite us to first recognize and honor the differences as well as the diversity, not to wipe them away, ignore them, hide them with our unity. Instead, we look behind and beneath to see the difference, that to see that difference does not mean better or worse, because in the end, we are all connected. There is a unity. And the work that these words call us to would be simple if difference and diversity were not always, interminably so, subject to valuation and bias. I heard this firsthand account from the racial justice leader, John Powell. Returning home one evening, Dr. Powell, an African American, was accosted by three white men. They met him near his door and struggled with him, managing to take his wallet and his watch after firing a shot, a fear tactic. Dr. Powell's neighbor and dear friend, the local appellate judge, heard the shot and looked outside to view the skirmish. Later, when he saw Dr. Powell, the judge asked him, "Where were you when that shot was fired?" "I looked outside and there was this one really big black man towering above three white guys." "That was me," returned Powell. But the judge wouldn't believe it. No, it wasn't you. That was a big and scary guy, a big black guy with a huge afro." "That was me," returned Powell. "Those men were stealing my wallet." This was a judge, a man who works hard every day of his life to get to the truth of any given situation. This was Powell's friend. He saw a big black man with an afro, and Powell has a close crop. He saw a black man towering above three small white men. Why? Because of an unconscious bias, born of an unequal valuation of black and white. Do you hear me? The unconscious is very fast. The conscience is slow. And the unconscious doesn't care about our ideals. Our brains, they process 11 million bytes per second, and we are conscious of about 40. At best, 2% of our emotional cognition is available to us consciously. 2%. The process of othering occurs in our unconscious. Othering is treating difference as unequal. It is valuing one kind, one sort, as less than another. And it doesn't require consciousness for bias. This othering, it becomes consequential without our awareness of it. It will and it does order our world in a way unrepresentative of our conscious values. All the time, for all of us, no matter how hard we work to upend it. 11 million bytes. Verse 40. Here's another example. I love this one. I find it hilarious. A survey was given to millions of men. They were shown pictures of women, all lovely-looking women, and asked to choose those that they found the most beautiful. Four are always chosen, almost exclusively chosen. What do you think? They weren't the white ones or the perfectly symmetrical ones. They weren't even the younger ones. The four that are chosen are the four that had their photos taken when they were ovulating. Really? I have a game I play. Oh, and by the way, I have where these surveys and stuff come from. I'm not going to give you all the footnotes as we're going through, but if you're interested and you want to read more, I'm glad to share. I have a game that I play. This shows that we are all culpable in this. If I can remain calm enough when searching for a parking spot in the city, I will find one. I will find the perfect spot if I keep breathing deep and believing in my angelic ability to find that perfect spot. And it works. It always does, right? I keep believing. It doesn't really work, but I've told myself it does so many times that I detest that truth with conviction. We are primed to notice some things and not others. The psychologist's term is confirmation bias. We want the world to conform or to confirm our biases. As simple as that. We want to be right, and so that's what we see. If we remember our umbrella, it won't rain, right? If we wash our car, it will. If you get up to use the powder room, the food will arrive. We all kind of believe these things, right? White people are better leaders. Mexicans are lazy. Women can't do math. And this confirmation bias, it doesn't just affect a value imbalance outside of ourselves. I remember when I learned and then confirmed that women can't do math. I was great at it until fifth grade. Then I just gave up. It seems, looking back, that I preferred to confirm my bias, to live into that false truth. A team at our congregation recently worked to hire a new administrator. We worked consciously to value each resume on the specific merits of the potential employee. We could read the names and guess the heritage of the individual applicants: Irish, Italian, Indian, Ghanaian, Iranian. But we attempted to get behind the difference and beneath the diversity. Did bias enter into the way we valued their capacities? Maybe. Likely. We consciously worked against it, but again, we were like all humans all the time. We were conscious of 40 bites, not the 11 million. A black boy reaches for a cell phone, and he is shot. A white boy reaches for a cell phone, and he is 95% more likely to not be shot. An Arabic woman sat down in the seat in front of me on the plane. I considered how I would act when she pulled out a gun and began a hostile takeover. 200 other passengers got onto the plane. I did not have that same thought for any of them. I have dear friends that are Muslim. I work against conscious bias, but it lives unconsciously in me. Schleiermacher, the liberal theologian, reminds us that human freedom is in the pause that we take to consider before we act. And without this, we would just be beasts, dependent alone on our unconscious instincts. But the unconscious is a social phenomenon, not only an individual one. We have built laws and institutions that mimic our internal biases and enact our implicit valuation of society. Inequality is not itself immoral. I'm an unequal editor. I need many of you here to read my work before I'll share it with the world. We are unequal in our gifts and our weaknesses. There is diversity and difference. Inequality is not itself immoral, but a society ordered on a wholly given, incarnate, immovable value balance is. Cain wanders, marked, a reminder that he should not be punished. Cain wanders, and when we see him, when we meet him at our door, when we realize that his gifts have not been valued, that God even refused to bless him, maybe we will remember the persistent and prevalent value imbalance in our world. Cain wanders. When we meet him, how should we respond? Cain wanders to remind us that no human life should be valued as greater or lesser than any other. To do so is to punish a soul for eternity. It may be ours that we are punishing. It may be theirs. God's blessing, that blessing of knowing our life is worthy and dignified, must not be limited. How do we create a society, then, that does not implicitly or explicitly limit God's blessing? where every child born, black, white, brown, able, differently abled, gay, straight, female, male, will be empowered to live as fully and fruitfully as every other. It's not as simple as Republican or Democrat. Our politicians would like us to think that it is. But both sides allow their implicit biases to direct their ideologies and manifest as imbalanced policies. It's a longer process than just one election. The problem of othering is the problem of the 21st century. Let us commit ourselves first to outing ourselves as a people who other. But let's do it without shame. This is not a mea culpa. This is our brains. This is our neurology and how we have been wired to work for a millennia. This is, however, also a declaration that we are all Cain and all Abel, all caught in the same human puzzle. Perhaps there in the puzzle, we will meet the ground of our unity, and perhaps there we will commit ourselves to freedom for our conscience, and in due time, a long, long time, perhaps we will commit ourselves to blessing all equally with inherent value and freeing our world. Amen.